coming to the programs literally were stinking to hell. They were promiscuous. Sometimes, you know, the women just take their clothes off. And, you know, they were just like, you know, it was just really totally out of control.
So
Prabhupada.
Holy shit.
So from Prabhupada's point of view, he just advised everyone to dress like a Hindu, just like a religious Jew. For example, if you look at in India, the English medium schools set up by Christians, or just, you know, just sort of Western schools in India, they all dress like English schoolboys and schoolgirls. So it's like when you go somewhere, it's just natural, you know, that's what you know. Just that, you know, that's your culture. And so, like Prabhupada, who was, you know, he wanted to take these boys and girls who had been very degraded and sort of just make them ladies and gentlemen, so just, okay, just dress like normal religious students, which were Prabhupada men, you know, dhotis, sari. It's not Vaishnav, it's not in India, but one's wearing sari, it doesn't mean she's a Vaishnavi. Sure. And so, it's just, it's almost like, I mean, it's the same thing, it's just sort of natural psychology. Like when the European missionaries went, let's say, to Africa and found a bunch of people walking around, you know, au naturel, you know, then what do? They just dressed them in coats, you know, like pants and shirts, and the women in skirts and blouses, because that's just what they understood, you know, that's what it means to be civilized. Yeah, so, and a dhoti, again, in India, if you wear a dhoti, it doesn't mean you're Vaishnav. It's not, in the place that it comes from, it's not Vaishnav dress. And, I mean, for example, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was very, apparently very eccentric, so much so that all the devotees thought he was just a Maya, because he would dress very opulently in all kinds of different, you know, modern clothes at the time, modern clothes. But it turns out that in his last life, he was Radharani's father. You know, he was Vrishabhanu. So it's hard to imagine a more advanced position than Radharani's father. And yet, all the devotees thought he was just like, in Maya, because you're not dressed properly. And, you know, he just... So, and I remember one time I was talking to a well-known ISKCON sannyasi guru who came to visit me in L.A. And he said, Maharaj, I've heard some serious criticism of you. I said, really? Because I kind of collect these things. And so he said, yeah. I said, well, what's the heaviest thing you've heard? And he said, well, the heaviest thing I've heard is that you were, like, seen in public wearing a gumsho. I mean, there are many parts of India where that's all people wear. You know, that's all men wear. And so I just, somehow or other, by Christian's arrangement, without even getting up, I just reached over to a little, little shelf, and I took a picture of the six Goswamis, where they were wearing not only gumshoes, but they were wearing like mini gumshoes. I mean, above the knee. That's pretty scandalous. They're wearing above the knee. I mean, a gumshoe goes down halfway down your calf, if you're not, unless you're like a basketball player or something. So, anyway.
So, I have a question, because before you were saying how the question is a standard dress appropriate, and then what would that be?
What Prabhupada always said is that either wear, like say, dhoti and sari, or, and it was always your choice, like a lady or gentleman. All Prabhupada really wanted, if you really read what he said, all he really wanted is that you just be respectable. You just be, you know, civilized, be a lady or a gentleman. So in India, when Prabhupada was growing up, and not anymore, by the way, it's all changed, but in the old India that doesn't exist anymore, to be a lady or a gentleman, sort of conservative dress, was a dhoti or a sari. And that's, of course, that's gone now. In the West, to be a lady or gentleman means that you may, you know, whatever, just respectable clothes. Like, I mean, I went out walking, so this is, you know, this is like normal. I could be anything, Republican, a Democrat, a Hare Krishna, you know, whatever. It's just, so all Prabhupada wanted is just something to be ladies and gentlemen. East or West, whatever. That's all he really wanted. And he says that. There's a conversation with Rameshwara in 1975, when Rameshwara was really like the national Sankirtan leader, and he said, can a devotee, can the brahmacharis, he said, can let they let their hair grow a bit. I mean, not, you know, obviously not so that you get like those seductive waves and curls, but just, you know, just let your hair grow a little bit so you don't look like a, sort of like a bowling ball with a sheik on it. And so, and if they could wear Western dress. And Prabhupada said, yeah. He said, and then Prabhupada says, my fear was that you would become hippies again. That's why I insisted on this dress. So it's interesting that, and why did Prabhupada care? I mean, you really think he came to the West to rip our pants off and, you know, and put a sheet around us? Okay, is that why he got in the boat? Like a war on pantalones?
Yeah, no.
Mostly I want pantalones. I mean, that's the last thing in the world he really cared about, is to rip everyone's pants off. And, you know, it's funny, because when Prabhupada came to 26 Second Avenue, he kept saying that there are so many nice things in America, but there's zeros without Krishna. If you just put the one of Krishna, you get a big number. So in our zealous, kind of like born-again, Gaudiya Vaishnava minds, it's like, no, first thing you got to do is bring in a big truck, haul out all the American zeros, and then bring in all the Indian zeros, and then put the one up. So we've taken on ourselves this burden, like, we got to get rid of these Western zeros, you know, we got to bring in the Hindu zeros. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people who wear saris and dhotis that are complete, you know, that are just, I really admire. There's all kinds of people wearing dhotis and saris that blaspheme Krishna, that eat meat. It's like the environmental movement. I mean, long, thousands of years before the Industrial Revolution, when the Earth was totally ecological, there were all kinds of slaughters and massacres and rapes going on. So the thing is, it's really about Krishna consciousness. And frankly, it's so funny because they always say that as you get older, you become more like your parents. And so it's so funny how, in some ways, we've become the religion that we left to join the Hare Krishna movement. I remember back in the 60s and 70s, one of the most common things you'd hear from people like joining ISKCON is that, yeah, in my religion, all they care about is, like, you know, external rituals and things like that. And now we've become that. Like, the mark of love of God is, you know, that you're dressed like an Indian. And that shows you really have love of Godhead. Mm-hmm. Personally, and just speaking personally, and this, I'm actually being very humble, you know, obviously I'm the standard for the entire galaxy, but just taking the humble position. Personally, if I'm out on the street, let's say in a dhoti, people say, why are you dressed like that? I really don't know, I don't know a good answer. I mean, if I had to give an honest answer, I'd say because when religions migrate from one region to another, they tend to come in ethnic vehicles. And so in the Hare Krishna movement, we believe that somehow Indian dress is intrinsically spiritual. And that's why we're dressed. I think that's what I'd say. Because I think that's really the answer. It's interesting because, like, in South India, where the Christians convert a lot of people, Christian dress, like if you wanted to be a serious Christian, South India, say, you know, years ago, you'd wear a suit and tie if you were a man. And that was Christian dress.
Yeah.
If you didn't wear, like a suit and tie, you weren't like really a serious Christian. Because that was the dress of the missionaries that came over. So suit and tie was Christian dress. Or it's interesting, it's like among the Hasidic Jews, you know, the sightseekers, they wear these black suits. I personally don't think they're going to win many fashion contests, but they wear these black suits and these hats. Why? Because that's the way people used to dress in Eastern Europe. What is it? Lubavitch, I forget the name. But this Hasidic movement started in Northeast Europe, and that was just the way people in Northeast Europe dressed. So that becomes their religious uniform. And if you don't dress like that, you're not a serious Hasidic. But all it is East European dress. So you can see how human psychology really, like, latches onto these things. And my concern, ultimately my concern is that we present a spiritual science. And so if I see that there's a widespread belief within our movement, because that which I just find is not scientific, then I, you know, throw up a red flag. Because I just don't think it's rational or scientific to tell people that it's more spiritually powerful to dress like an Indian than Western. That just doesn't sound scientific to me. Huh? I don't really have anything to say about it. Got him on the rope.
I sometimes feel that, like, you know, it's... I hate to say it because it sounds really, I guess, corny. But it's... You're right, it is like... it is a stereotypical thing. But I think at the same time, I feel that, in a way... Not that everybody needs to wear a sari and dhoti. Ultimately, it should be up to that person. But I really think if we start to focus too much on, like, getting away from it, it's like bricks in a wall. And you pull out one brick, and you just start
pulling
out all these.
But that's, I think what you said really points out a significant issue. And that is, I think it's dangerous for us if our self-understanding, our identity, has become so deeply dependent on something so superficial. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say if a woman or a man dresses indecently, I would say, you know, that's not Krishna conscious, that's not appropriate. Not on ethnic grounds, but just because it's focusing people's attention on your dying body instead of on Krishna. And so you're committing violence against people by distracting them from Krishna. And so, but if our self-understanding, if our sense that we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are committed to Prabhupada and Krishna, if it is seriously dependent on something so superficial as dressing like an Indian, I think we've almost trivialized it. I think we're really distorting the spiritual science. So if that's the case... Again, I actually do sometimes talk about other things. I try not to talk too much about other things, but I guess it's, you know, it seems that it becomes like a mark of status. Like if you're in a temple, if you're wearing a dhoti, then you're a better devotee than if you're not, or you're a more serious devotee. And I think it actually deflects attention away from real issues, like people's character, like how much people are really devoted to Krishna, how much service they do, whether they are really attached to Krishna's name. It's interesting, it's like the typical small town psychology. You know, you think of like a little town, like if anyone does anything even slightly different, the whole town is all abuzz. And so there's a bit of that among us, like this real small town mentality, like you're not doing anything exactly like everybody else. And so, I think it's good periodically, it's healthy for us to diagnose ourselves, reevaluate ourselves, and see, are we really on track? Are we scientific about Krishna consciousness? I mean, if you tell people, why am I dressed in dhoti? Because it helps me to feel connected to an ancient tradition, although we actually don't know how ancient that dhoti is. It may only be several hundred years old. There's absolutely no evidence that at the time of Krishna people dress like that. But still, you say because it makes me feel connected to Lord Chaitanya's tradition, it's just something which helps me to stay in a consciousness that I want to be in. And so I use it as an aid to consciousness.
I like the comfort.
What?
I like the comfort.
Yeah, unless you trip on something.
Yeah, I've almost taken a header down quite a few steps. You guys don't have to worry about the tail in the back, either do you? Your foot gets caught on the tail, and that's what's dangerous.
Oh yeah, you can turn into a Gaudiya Vaishnava streaker pretty quick. I remember I was walking, just driving down a road in... I guess going from Mayapur back to Calcutta, I noticed all these like Indian gentlemen that were walking maybe 20 years ago. They're like walking down the road with their dhotis, and because there was a little wind, they had to hold it so it didn't open up. And so I just think of like a dress where you can't even just like have your arms free as you're walking. You actually have to hold on to your clothes as you're walking. It's just, maybe it's a trivial point.
Yeah.
And then you get devotees giving arguments like, well, simple living, high thinking. What I say is, you know, you have a contest, one person gets into a dhoti, another person slips into a pair of pants to see like what's faster. And it takes like about 5 times more cloth for a dhoti, and it's just, you know, when you dry it, it's a major issue, like where you can put it to dry it. So in terms of simple living, plus there's so many paintings of Krishna wearing pants. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying everyone has to wear pants, but it's, I think it's significant in this sense. I think it's a major obstacle to fulfilling Prabhupada's and Lord Chaitanya's purpose. If we strongly give the impression to the public, which I think we tend to do, that if you want to practice bhakti yoga, you have to be ethnically Indian. If you want to practice bhakti yoga, you need to not merely add Krishna. I don't think we're giving that. See, Prabhupada said just add Krishna. And I think we're actually distorting that message. And I think that was Prabhupada's, perhaps, his central message to people in general, just add Krishna to your life. And so if our movement inadvertently is distorting and obfuscating, just like blocking Prabhupada's central message, I think that is a big issue. And I think we are doing that. We have festivals in India.
Yeah, I don't agree.
Yeah, why not have a festival of spirituality or something? I mean, a lot of things in India are very unspiritual, and some things are very spiritual. So that I think is a big issue. That's why I talk about it, because I think that we are distorting and twisting one of Prabhupada's most central messages by our body language. Prabhupada said, just add Krishna. I'm not sure that we actually communicate that. And you go out on the street, and everyone's dressed in dhotis and saris, and everyone's playing Indian instruments, and then you just happen to say something on the street, oh, you just add Krishna. I think when they go home, what they remember is the massive Indianness. And so I do not think this movement is effectively communicating one of Prabhupada's central messages. And I think our failure to effectively communicate that is one of the main impediments to spreading this movement. So that's what I feel is at stake.
Makes sense. I'm not going to take my dirty off.
Okay, everybody, grab him. Wait, I'll hold him here. Run to his room. Burn all his...
There are ladies in the men's room.
So, I have a question.
Yes.
What was established at New Vrindavan at one point, where they decided to wear robes?
That was just weird. That was, cuckoo.
But was it? I mean, as far as they just decided to...
Yeah, because robes are probably... What they did decide to wear was just as strange as a dhoti, if not stranger. I mean, at least a dhoti could say, okay, that's from India. The robes just like, oh my God, where's that? That's sort of like a Vedic friar tuck or something. I mean, it's just...
I don't think, like, bringing that up, I don't think, to me, that the issue isn't as much what they were wearing as why they were wearing it. You know, to try to get the Christian population so people would...
Well, you see, but Prabhupada just said, what Prabhupada said is very clear. He said, either you dress in a respectable, sort of old-fashioned Indian way, or you dress in a respectable Western way. He didn't say, there was no third thing, like, okay, concoct some new kind of monastic robe or something out of just invent something. He just said, just be a normal person. Just be, in other words, the public should see us as just normal ladies and gentlemen, just nice, respectable people. So then, and so in the West, that's what Prabhupada said. I remember when I was with Prabhupada in Honolulu in 1975. I can't remember. Anyway, the president there would have been Sudama Swami. Had left, taken a bunch of money, and so Prabhupada went there, and it was, sort of scandal. The new GBC that took over Guru Kripa Swami wanted to prosecute him, and the first Prabhupada said yes, and then Prabhupada said no, we don't want this legal. And so, it's kind of like there's a big thing going on. And I remember driving in the car with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just saying, I never said that you have to live in a temple or have to dress like this. He said, just be a... If you can't do this, just be a lady or a gentleman. That's fine. what he always said. I mean, Prabhupada had a consistent message. Prabhupada always had like these very simple messages that he repeated again and again. He just kept, I remember in the car saying, you know, just be a gentleman. You don't have to dress like this. Just be a gentleman. That's all Prabhupada wanted, is that his disciples be seen as respectable ladies and gentlemen. That's all he wanted.
But that makes it sound, if you said, if you can't do this, then be.
No, it wasn't that mood like, you know, I want you to do this, but if you can't do that. He's just saying, like, if you don't like this, do that. It's like, it's your choice. I don't care which one you do. I mean, Prabhupada himself didn't live in a temple when he was a householder. And he didn't, you know, he just wore regular, he wore the clothes everybody else was wearing. And when Prabhupada, he once said to me, you're walking in Mayapur, and he said some, you know, like sort of Hindu purists in India were criticizing because Prabhupada was flying around the world. He said, should I just be a fool and just walk on foot like Lord Chaitanya? That was practical. If you look at, I mean, Prabhupada just wore, you know, Prabhupada, he wore Western clothes, he wore canvas shoes. He wore sweaters, he wore jackets. He just did whatever, he just, you know, he dressed like a sannyasi, because when he came to America, he was almost 70 years old, you know what I mean? He was 70 years old, he grew up in that culture, he's not going to... It's like when I went to, you know, when I go to foreign countries, I just dress the way I always do. I don't, like if I go to, let's say, England, I'm not trying to, okay, what's the latest English fashion? If I go to South America, okay, what's everybody wearing this year in South America? I just wear what I wear, you know? So Prabhupada just went as a sannyasi. But other than that, you know, he went on planes. We went on a plane. He gave me a 7-Up on a plane. We were on a plane. The stewardess, you know, flight attendant came around. He said, want a 7-Up? And he said, pointing to me, give him one too. And so he didn't say, do you have any Indian drinks? Or, you know, I can't wear Western canvas shoes. I need some Indian shoes. And, you know, we go nuts over these things. It's obvious what Prabhupada wanted, just be a respectable lady or gentleman. And that's fine. From the very beginning, somehow I had that enthusiasm. I remember, before I joined the movement, in the summer of 69, summer of Prem, I remember I was in L.A. and I surrounded the devotees chanting on Sunset Boulevard in L.A. I'm from L.A. and so... So I started, in fact, I was showing, I had a cousin visiting, a girl from East, and so I was just showing her around, LA family, after the show around. So, you know, I got her to chant, we were both chanting, and then I thought, should I go chant in line with the devotees? And then I thought, no, it's better they see a so-called normal person like them chanting, that'll be more effective. So even like back in 1969, before I joined the movement, I had that idea, they should think, what's true, that we're just normal people when we chant Hare Krishna. And my final point, I'll make one more point and then go, but according to our philosophy, it's Veda Veda. If you look at the Bhagavad Gita, devotees are one with non-devotees, and they're different from non-devotees. Krishna sometimes talks about the devotees as a separate category, and often he just talks about all living beings. So therefore, I think it's the purpose of our movement to show the oneness and the difference. And I think because of very obvious socio-psychological factors of the New Young Movement, we obsessed on the difference. I mean, there was a time in this country when we were young, we had to do everything different. Like, nothing could be the same as the non-devotees. We had to do everything differently and better. And so I think, frankly, this movement became a little obsessed with differentiation. And in doing that, we make it hard for people to identify with us. And to be perfectly honest, I mean, I think I understand clearly that I'm a servant of Prabhupada and I'm a, you know, wannabe Vaishnava and so on. And I'm a loyal member of ISKCON and all that. But at the same time, I feel like I'm also just a, you know, I'm just a soul. And when I walk down the street and I see other souls or trees or birds, I feel like, you know, it's all the same family. And so to me, the oneness is real. And I don't want to be like totally different. Because I don't feel totally different. I feel that I'm one with all other living beings under Krishna. And I don't want to be completely different. Because to me, that's inauthentic and it's not the way I feel. When I read Bhagavad Gita, I think I'm following the Gita. Krishna says, Jumam Pasiti Sarvata, one who sees me everywhere, one who sees everything in me. Suhridang Sarva Bhutanam. Krishna doesn't say, Suhridang Sarva Bhaktanam. the well-wisher of all the devotees, he says the well-wisher of all beings. Every living being is part of Krishna. They've forgotten it, but everyone is actually a devotee, everyone is actually part of Krishna. We're trying to remind them. And so, I don't want to go out there and just be like radically different from everybody. To me, it's unnatural, and it almost creates an illusion in my mind. And I think that I think if you go out there to preach and you feel comfortable and natural, that's what's effective. Because if you meet someone that's just like really happy and comfortable and natural, it's just pleasant to be around that person. And I think that's what attracts people. And also, and if you wear a dhoti, certain kinds of people come up and ask, like, tell me about this. Some people won't come up. And so I think, it's not bad, and it's certainly one valid way to preach, but you are definitely attracting a certain niche. And other people would be much more comfortable. I remember when I was in San Luis Obispo just doing some preaching. I was on a writing retreat, and there's one girl that, came, began chanting Hare Krishna with us. She was a yoga teacher, now she's getting a doctorate in physical therapy or something in LA. And she used to tell me, she's like really, really intelligent girl. She used to always tell me that, this is the only way in the world I ever could have become interested in Krishna consciousness. She said, when I see the devotees out there, like dressed in their dhotis, when I, they come to me trying to sell a book, she said, I am so turned off. And this is the only way I could have learned about it. I've had a lot of people tell me that. So when you go out in a dhoti, it's a niche. And that doesn't mean it's like insignificant or useless, but it is a little niche. And there's lots of other people who would be much more attracted other ways. And I've had lots of people tell me that thank God you presented it this way because I can't stand the other thing. I've had a lot of people tell me that.